Good morning. Today's reading is taken from Spring Snow by Yukio Mishima, beginning at chapter 34. Kiyoaki made secret trips to Tokyo at least once every 3 days, and on his return he would give Honda all the details of what had gone on. The Toinomiyas had indeed postponed the betrothal ceremony, but that by no means meant that there was any significant obstacle to Satoko's marriage to the young prince. She was, in fact, often invited to their house, and the prince's father, His Imperial Highness himself, had started treating her with cordial affection. Kiyoaki was not at all satisfied with the way things stood. Now he was thinking of having Satoko down to Kamakura to spend the night at the villa, and he asked Honda if he had any idea about how to carry out such a dangerous plan. But on even the most cursory reflection, one grave difficulty after another was brought to light. One hot, sultry night, as Kiyoaki was settling into an uneasy sleep, he began to dream. It was quite unlike his previous experiences. If one flounders in the shallows of sleep, wading where the water is tepid and full of all sorts of flotsam that has come in from deeper water to pile up with the land debris in a tangled heap, one is liable to slash one's feet. Kiyoaki was standing in the middle of a road that led through open fields. For some reason he was wearing a white cotton kimono and matching hakama, a costume he had never worn, and he was armed with a hunting rifle. The land around him was rolling country, but it was not deserted. He could see a cluster of farmhouses up ahead, and a cyclist passed him on the road. A strange, sombre light permeated the entire scene. It was no brighter than the final traces of daylight, and was so diffuse that it could more easily have sprung from the ground rather than the sky, for the grass in the rolling fields gave off a green glow from its very roots, and bathed the bicycle in a hazy silver gleam as it vanished into the distance. He looked down and saw that even the thick thongs of his clogs and the veins of his bare feet stood out with brilliant, uncanny clarity. At that moment the light filmed over and a huge flight of birds appeared in the sky. When they reached a point above his head, filling the air with their squawking cries, he aimed his rifle upward and pulled the trigger. He did not fire in cold blood. It was rather that he was seized by an unfathomable anger and grief, and he fired, aiming not so much at the birds as at the great blue eye of the sky itself. The whole flock plummeted earthward in a single mass, a tornado of screams and blood that linked heaven and earth. Countless shrieking birds, their blood spurting out, tumbled down in an unending stream, gathered into one thick column that formed the cone of the whirlwind. The cascade of blood and fury never slackened. As he watched, the whirlwind solidly solidified before his eyes and became a giant tree that stretched to the heavens. Its trunk was a forbidding rust colour, devoid of leaves or branches. As soon as this giant tree took shape and the screaming died away, the same sombre glow that had lit up the fields before the storm spread out over them once more. Down the road appeared a new silver bicycle, without a rider, and made its way unsteadily toward him. He was proud to have been the one to sweep away the obstacle that had blocked the light of the sun. But then in the distance he saw a group coming his way along the road. They were all dressed in white, just as he was. They checked their solemn, measured advance a few yards away. He saw that each of them carried a silver-shining sakaki branch in his hand. They pointed their branches towards him and began to wave them in the rite of purification, the rustle of leaves echoing clearly in his ears. As they did so, he was startled to recognise the face of his former retainer Ianuma in their midst. Ianuma himself spoke to him. "You are heedless and intractable. You have proved it beyond all question." Then the white-clad group pointed to the tree, and when he looked at it, he saw the massive trunk of dead birds was now covered with branches, all of which were laden with glossy green leaves. The whole tree was vivid green, down to its lowest branches. Then he woke up. Since the dream had been so extraordinary, he reached out to open his dream journal, which he had neglected for some time now. He began to write, trying to record the events as accurately and as objectively as he could. Even now that he was awake, however, he was torn by the fierceness and antagonism of the dream. He felt as if he had just returned from battle. Here ends the reading. Have a very good day.